Hi, I'm Christina Crowley-Arkley. I'm a Canadian dairy farmer's daughter, strategic marketing and communications entrepreneur, and your host for Country Guides podcast series. With renewed focus on your farm, your conversation, I sat down with farmers across Canada to talk about their stories of success and failure, what keeps them going every day, and how they're positioning themselves and their farm for generations to come. All right, let's get into it. Mark, thank you so much for joining me here for a chat today.
No problem.
So glad that we got to do this because you and I obviously know each other well.
Yes.
But to find some time in your busy farming schedule, glad that we could make this happen.
Yeah, no, awesome.
Yeah.
Appreciate the chance.
So give the audience and the listeners a bit of a foresight on where you're farming in Ontario, how many acres, what you're cropping,
sure.
Of course, who's involved.
Yeah, so I farm with my wife, Sandy Brock. I think some people may know because of her social media presence.
Yeah.
And we just farm kind of north of London, about 45 minutes out in the Hensel, Exeter area. About 1,700 acres of grain farming, kind of mostly the boring crops of corn, soybeans, winter wheat. But we do dabble into some fun stuff like winter canola lately. We've been doing some winter barley. We like to malt it. It's been difficult to find a malting place, actually,
yeah,
in Ontario, which is, I thought it would be easier with all the craft breweries.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a challenge. So we like to have a little bit of fun with our acres there. And then Sandy, as many know, manages the sheep side of our operation. So it's the two of us, and our daughter Jessica helps out when she can, and our son as well, Jackson. So just kind of a fun little spot to be.
Family oriented, for sure.
Yeah, by choice in a way. We've kind of looked at our operation and said, you know, we just kind of want to do the work ourselves. We don't want a big, vast fleet of employees. And, you know, the land base we have at 1,700 acres, we still have lots of improvements to do there. So we're not really in a massive expansion mode either. So between Sandy and I, it's a lot of work, but we seem to get most of it done with some part-time help.
And still loving life while you're doing it too.
Yeah, well, some days we love life more than others, but
yeah,
I think that's just the challenge of any job or occupation when you're an owner, operator kind of thing. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we'll be married 25 years actually next week. So
it was wild.
We can't be doing things too wrong.
If you're still working together and still loving each other. So it's a good sign. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the acres that you run, 1,700 with not a lot of help or like employees, I mean, that's admirable. And how do you make the decision to crop what you do? I mean, I'd love to understand inside the brain of yours how you go about making the type of business decisions you do.
Yeah, so as Sadie calls my brain the squirrel cage.
Okay.
I spend a lot of time in the wintertime. Like, you know, we always kind of, people joke around with farmers and cash croppers for sure. It's like, oh, you guys only have to work hard from April to like November and
yeah,
then you just go Arizona in the wintertime. We spent a lot of time doing analysis, ROI, on a lot of the things we do on the farm, run a lot of spreadsheets, but we're driven by business decisions, and we kind of look at things through an economic lens most of the time.
Yeah.
With always that kind of environmental side of it too, right? Like, you know, the land is precious to us. We're not going to do stuff to jeopardize its health or quality, but at the same time, we're in a business, and, you know, as much as farming can be a lifestyle, it's got to be treated as a business. And that's kind of one of, you know, our, within our strategic plan on our farm and our mission and our vision, you know, it is recognized that farming is a business. So we do a lot of analysis on things and making sure that what we did worked, it paid back, and where we can do improvements. So, you know, we look at a lot of investments in technology because we find a really good ROI on it.
Yeah.
I think labor in any business anymore is a challenge.
Yeah.
And agriculture now is like a lot of people kind of ho-hummed, and we talked about unskilled labor, but agriculture now with the tech involved is actually very much skilled labor.
Yeah.
And we have to pay accordingly. So, you know, sometimes you can balance off some, capital investments against, you know, what an employee would cost. You can actually take that money and put it towards tech. So
yeah,
we're always crunching numbers. I have numerous spreadsheets. It's kind of ridiculous, actually.
I'd love to sit beside you and see that squirrel cage, as you called it, works with the applied formula and the Excel spreadsheet to see how the numbers work. Because I feel like that's even something that a lot of farmers don't have. I don't think it's like an Excel spreadsheet to put the numbers back into the end of the year to say, yeah, this worked, this didn't, this is how it's going to help us make better decisions.
Like for us, like we actually, through the growing season and through the whole year, really, we actually have a living P&L. So we have a profit and loss statement through a program I use called Harvest Profit.
Okay.
And what it does is actually goes out and captures Chicago price all the time, puts a basis against it, and takes, you know, every pass I go through the field, I put the cost of it in, And every day, whether the market goes up or down, it shows me how much I made or lost on the farm.
That'd be eye-opening.
Yeah, some days it's better. So some days, like, you can make $40,000 in a rally in the market, and other days you can lose as much. So it really puts into importance the knowing your cost production and knowing marketing. So a big thing that we've also been doing too is just reaching out to professionals and getting help, because I think, you know, people sometimes look at it as a cost of the business, but, you know, we kind of invested in some marketing advice, like a marketing advice service, and it's more than paid for itself numerous times. So, you know, I think we can't be afraid of looking for professional help.
And just that great advice.
It comes with the cost, but a lot of times that cost is minimal when you look at what you can get benefit out of on the farms.
Who would you say you turn to for advice then? Like, obviously this Excel spreadsheet sounds amazing. But who would you turn to for advice if you were thinking an idea, or Sandy came with you an idea? Who do you guys turn to?
It's sometimes it's a real challenge, because when you start to think outside the box a little bit too much, you have to step outside of agriculture and actually talk to people outside of our industry, because they tend not to have some of our biases that we have towards approaches. But, you know, I think, you know, going through my career now, it's been 25 plus years, you've always had mentors along the way that you've kind of leaned on at different stages in your life. And it's kind of funny, I find, as I've gotten older now, that I'm becoming that mentor to some, actually. So, you know, it's interesting, because you'll have some younger producers reach out and want to pick your brain about something. And I think they think it's a very one-way conversation where they're trying to get information from you. But I actually find I get a lot of perks and advice from younger producers as well, because they take a different approach to it. Because, you know, if our kids come home to farm, I don't want them to farm the way I farm. I want them to farm the way they think they should.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really nice about having conversations with younger producers, is that they actually challenge me to do it differently as well.
But even that, like, type way of thinking, Mark, like, a lot of farmers wouldn't think like that, right? Be like, they'd want their kids to farm the way that they did. And so the fact that you're open to wanting to have your kids farm different and better is...
Yeah, and I would challenge, like, for sure. And I think, you know, if you're a farm operation that tends to do that, and I, you know, I shouldn't be critical, but I'm going to be anyways.
Yeah, you know,
sometimes that's why you're stagnant.
Yeah.
Is that you're stuck in this idea of, you know, this is how I do it, this is how my dad did it, or my mom's family, or, you know, so if a daughter comes home to farm, it's like, you got to do it like me. I'm like, I want them not to do it like.
Yeah.
I think that's a challenge we have to have as we do succession. And succession's going to look a lot different. You know, it's the idea that it's a family member that comes home, but, you know, in conversations with our kids, it's like, there's nothing wrong with hiring a non-family farm manager to take over the business and manage it and pay them well to do it. And you take more of a backseat role. Like, there's lots of ways to do this. I think we have to really step out this box we painted ourselves in agriculture, that this is how succession's got to happen.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm always puzzled, because we have some of, like, the greatest technology and innovation of any sector in Canada, any sector. Like, think of where we were just a few decades ago with horse and plow in a field to now having self-driving tractors and AI and ag tech. And yet it's almost like the people side of things is where we've maybe held ourselves back on in terms of succession planning, what we need from a mindset standpoint. And, like, so how can we kind of be this incredible sector with tech and being so forefront on that, and yet not in the mindset space of how we think?
I think the challenge that we have to look at is we have to step outside our comfort zone and our boundaries within agriculture. I think the biggest challenge that Sandy and I both given ourselves is that we have to go outside agriculture and invest in and time and conferences that aren't related to agriculture, and have conversations with other business owners to see what the challenges they have and what they look at doing things and how they transition businesses. Some of them just build a business to sell. And is there anything wrong with that?
I
don't think there is. I think we just get so wrapped up in ourselves, and it's different. We're busy people. Everyone's busy. And it's hard to do that. But I think we really have to step outside this box of agriculture and really diversify kind of, I guess, our who influences us and realize that we can do things differently.
It's almost like we have to get comfortable with giving up a bit of the traditional side of things if we want to be the most innovative sector in the future that's feeding the world.
Yeah, we have to be comfortable about being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we don't want to be uncomfortable, right? Like, you know, I had a lot of great opportunities with my Nuffield scholarship traveling the the world and spending, you know, a month in Australia and the seeing how they do it. Now it's farming.
Yeah.
Still, but it's such a different country, different, you know, challenges they have, that it was really a kind of eye opening to just realize that, you know, we have it pretty good where we are. You know, we don't have some of these challenges, but we just, you know, if someone comes to me looking for advice, my biggest thing is like, get out of your county, get out of Ontario.
Yeah.
Go to Western Canada.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I think a lot of people think there's this Western, Eastern Canadian agricultural divide.
Yeah.
But there's not. Like when you sit down and have a couple beers with a Western producer, we have a lot in common. And I just think, you know, challenges are a little different, but we still have, if you go to, I always call it, if you go from like the 30,000 foot level to the 100,000 foot level, there's
a
long lot of commonality.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, we just, you have to get out and kind of have conversations with other people so that you realize there's more than just you.
Yeah. And but to your point about like stepping outside of our sector to learn the type of stuff, it's almost like you just want to learn how other people think in other situations, other sectors. That's the greatest thing of like what you're going to learn from it. Yeah. How's that squirrel cage for someone else working in whatever sector? How are they thinking? And what can we do to apply that back to agriculture and food?
Yeah, it's really neat. Like Christian Hebert, out in Western Canada there, like I think a lot of people know him. And, you know, I've had great opportunities to know him and call him a friend. And, you know, he did kind of like, I forget what he called it, but he wanted to get some entrepreneurial coaching.
Yeah.
But it wasn't agriculture related. He had to fly into Toronto. He was doing it with people from the landscape industry and other things.
Yeah.
But in conversation with him, he's just like, you know, landscape, you think is a totally different business than agriculture, but they still have weather challenges. So he goes, it's interesting to see how they mitigate and deal with weather challenges that some of that could actually be applicable back to a farm, especially for someone that runs a farm his size. So it's kind of cool. So I know like he expressed a lot of value in that. And you know, I think it's really good advice.
What life experience, Mark, do you think like you can refer back to or that aha moment or advice that someone gave you that I guess pushed you to think like this, that got you comfortable with being uncomfortable, that got you starting to think differently? Like, was there a certain moment that you can remember?
I have to say that my dad and mom probably played a big role in that because they were always very innovative too and wanted to do farming differently. So I think it's some of it's the, you know, the environment that you're raised in a little bit, but also the environment you place yourself in. And I think sometimes you just, I call it maybe a dreamer. You're always a bit of a dreamer or, you know, some people are really good at analytics and engineering. Other people are good at coming up with ideas, but I just think I always had an innate curiosity about things that always kind of pushed myself to challenge myself to kind of just do things differently and talk to different people. And, you know, even when I went to school, I went through agriculture at OAC at Guelph, but I didn't hang out with the Aggies. I hung out with city people.
Yeah.
And because I want to understand what it was like, because I was in a high school of 400 people.
Yeah.
So talking with and making friends with people that lived in Oshawa that was in a school of like thousands.
Yeah.
It just, you know, I think it's just been a progressive thing always that I kind of challenge myself to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, it also helps too when you have a partner like you do with Sandy that something, you know, you guys complement each other in strengths and weaknesses. And like, you know what I mean? Like it helps to have a partner like that appreciates and respects the way you think, you appreciate and respect the way she thinks and how you do business together.
Yeah, no, it's really fun to farm with someone like that because, you know, it makes it really neat when you sit down and look at opportunities. Like, you know, when she kind of transitioned out of her family poultry operation way back when and got into sheep.
Yeah.
You know, that was a conversation we had to figure out how it worked. And, you know, it kind of blossomed from being a sheep farmer to like a YouTube content creator that you never think would have happened out of this journey. But, you know, we're always kind of looking for challenges and doing things differently that, you know, and with me being gone a lot with the Grain Farmers of Ontario back then, I think she was bored and wanted something to do. So she started videoing herself and look what it turned into.
I was going to say, so I feel like there's so much to talk about, but it sounds like you then wanted to take what you've learned on the farm and then again, that curiosity and wanting to learn with others, learn for others and help other people. You then got into Grain Farmers of Ontario all those years ago. Again, what motivated you to know that you're like, I gotta pursue, you know, farm politics and get involved in my local commodity organization?
You know, I have to credit a couple gentlemen that actually pushed me to do it. I'm an introvert for the most part. So to be in that role and kind of a forced extrovert,
yeah,
it was difficult. But I think we can't assume people are going to step up into those roles. We have to mentor people to want to take them on.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what I challenged myself in when I got involved with the Grain Farmers of Ontario and realized that, you know, quote unquote, I actually got mentored into the position
yeah.
a little bit without my knowing it. But, you know, so I took that challenge on myself, trying to get people involved in the organization and just realized that, you know, you have to, I don't know, it's a beautiful industry and you got to give back. So I felt like I had to give back to something.
Yeah. And it sounds like you were nudged at the right time too.
Nudged at the right time.
Yeah.
Well, there's never a right time, but it's a time that worked. But yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And I learned a lot. I grew a lot as a person.
I mean, and from knowing, obviously, because I feel like that's where you and I met all those years
yeah.
ago. You were put in some tougher situations as eventually you became chairman of your board, president
yes.
of your board. How did you manage through those situations? I'm just saying, again, to provide that advice to someone else who's either thinking of getting involved in their local commodity organization or, you know, and or thinking of a leadership position and some of the things you had to navigate.
So,
how did it push you?
Yeah, the biggest challenge you have to give yourself when you're involved in those and you start to step up into leadership roles in organizations, whether it's a commodity organization or whatever, you get caught up in kind of the biases of the organizations and confirmation biases. That I always would challenge myself to reach out to people that might not always agree with where we're at to try to do a litmus test of are we on the right path. So that's something I had to do kind of just to make sure that, you know, as we challenged the government around neo-Nicaregs,
yep.
I had to kind of reach out to, you know, I would say there's 6 or 7 people that I'd reach out to and that weren't involved in the organization at all and just kind of get a feel if we're on the right path. And if I felt we were, then I would keep pushing. If I felt like we weren't, then I would challenge some of the stuff that we were thinking about. But that's something I think is a good advice for anyone, like whether it's on your farm, whether it's you're involved in an organization, try to surround yourself with a group of people that kind of you can reach out to just to kind of get a touch point to say, hey, do you think I'm on the right track? Do you think we're on the right track? Am I crazy? And, you know, I call it kind of the quote unquote kind of like peer group support board kind of thing,
you know,
right? It's informal, but it really helps.
But it also sounds like you're one of those people who doesn't surround yourself with people who are necessarily always going to be rah-rah supporter, encourager. I mean, those people are amazing. You need those.
Yeah.
But you also need people who know you well enough and that they're going to like tell you the truth because
yep.
they, you know, they respect you enough and they
yep.
want to see you succeed. That they're
yep.
like, listen. And like, how do you set yourself up with those type of people?
I think it's a challenge. I think you find them, right? Like you find those people that when you're involved in different organizations, that well-spoken, intelligent people that will ask good questions and challenge points. And I think those are the ones that you want to kind of keep an eye on and just say, okay, you know, as we go down this, yeah, I got, you know, a whole bunch that are rah-rah, but I'm just going to ask this person here to see, you know, what they think.
And yeah. What are they hearing?
What are they hearing and what their thoughts are. So, you know, I think it's easy to get caught up in stuff, the momentum of things. But I think even on the farm, you have to stop and take a moment and kind of do those touch points. And it's funny because, you know, when we face weather challenges on the farm and, you know, it rains and we can't get crops planted or can't get hay done or something, it's like there's always... I have kind of like 5 people that we talk to and it's kind of like you call in the morning. It's like, even this is like emotional support group too. It gets to, it's just like, yeah, how's it going? It's good.
Yeah, you know. It's almost like you want to surround yourself with the people who would like would tell you that when you got something stuck in your teeth, you know, like those type of people.
You got a little something on your face, right?
Right. As you were about to just go do media or something, right? They're going to tell you the truth. I mean, in terms of like, where do you see yourself 10, 15 years. So it sounds like, I mean, I appreciate earlier in the interview, you said the word, like you have a mission, a vision for the farm business, a strategic plan. A lot of people can't use those words because like, they don't actually
They should.
So appreciate your entrepreneurial mindset applying to that. So what's your strat plan say? Like where are you going to be 10 years from now? Where do you think you're going
to
be?
Well, I think we have to redo it. That's the big challenge we have, Sandy and I right now. And we haven't pushed ourselves to do it because I think the conversation now is next generation, you know, and what retirement looks like for us. Like,
you're using the R word.
I know, you know, so
can't believe
I don't, not that I'm old, but I turned 50 and I'm like, so I look at this and say, okay, how much harder do I want to work? Like, I want to work, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to work differently, I guess.
Yeah, work smarter.
So, you know, a friend of mine's advice always has been, you know, retirement's freedom of the calendar. It's not like not working. It's just like I get to kind of work when I want to work.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. I'm a good 10 years away, but yeah. You can start thinking about this stuff. But I don't know where things are going to take me. I think it depends on interest within our family with the kids on the farm. You know, I think there's more opportunities for collaborating with younger producers. If our kids don't want to come home anytime soon, then, you know, why not start working with the younger producer that's interested in a farm operation like ours and start bringing them in so that I got time to do some other stuff. So, yeah, I think my big thing is that I just want some freedom to do some stuff. I don't know. I enjoyed the farm politics side of things. I'm not sure I'd go back to it again.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's...
Never say never.
It's always fun to engage with those people, though. So.
I mean, I was going to say, funny, you say farm politics. Would you ever consider running in politics one day?
It's like I have. You know, that's the long conversation if you get into politics. But I think the challenge we have as citizens, not even agricultural people or farmers, is that we have too much apathy and it's easy to sling crap without stepping up and actually trying to do it.
Yeah.
You know, from your history with your employment history, you kind of know the toll it takes on a person.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the easiest thing to step into. And, you know, I think we have too much apathy. So we got to put our money where our mouth is. If we have challenges and we feel like we need to do something, then put your foot forward and get off the being a keyboard warrior and
actually do something about it.
Yeah, step up.
I mean, as I say, then that's where you and Sandy are so unique as a couple, as farmers, as business owners, entrepreneurs. You're doing things that other people in our sector aren't doing. So, you know, I'm using the word trailblazers because it's like you are on social media as well yourself. You're sharing thought leadership, your day-to-day life. Sandy, of course, has become kind of like, I suspect that when she started out doing social media, she did not think that YouTube was going to be, you know, giving her accolades.
No.
You know, using her as like an example of what you do as a content creator. And again, I'm thinking of like how do we get more Mark and Sandy Brocks, right? Like, how do we get more people thinking like this, doing, and most importantly, like you said, doing this type of stuff?
I think the big thing, you have to invest in yourself. And that's actually one of our core values in our farm is invest in us, invest in ourselves and invest in people that work for us.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if we had an employee, it would be like, okay, what personal development do you want to do this year?
Yeah.
And I think that's a challenge we have to give ourselves as a producer is,
do we invest enough time and money in ourselves?
Yeah, you have to. Like, we're part of a peer group where we talk about our farm operation. We have a facilitator that does it, like, helps us with it. I feel bad because the one lady that's in the peer group, she's, like, herding cats. But there's a lot of value there, but you can't do it on the farm.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you even want to work on the farm and try to decide how to move the farm forward, go away for 2 days for a weekend and actually have a business weekend.
Yeah, have a chat about
it. Where you're not like, oh, something broke in the barn, so I'm just going to rush out and do that quick while we're trying to do a new strat plan.
Yeah, yeah.
But my advice to anybody is invest in yourself and invest in like leadership courses or do a Nuffield scholarship or do something that's different.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll be surprised that anytime you do that, there's always something you'll bring back to your business on the farm.
I have to ask you, what's your favorite book when you talk about personal development and leadership and mindset? Like, any book that you've read?
My favorite book is To Sell Is Human.
To Sell Is Human.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to read that one.
Yeah. I forget the author.
Yeah.
And it basically really is, it's kind of a weird way to say it, but life is sales.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when Sandy and I have a conversation about wanting to do a capital investment or fix the house somewhere, it's automatically a sales negotiation.
Yeah.
But I think what it does is it realizes that you have to understand people a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I think that's a challenge that we don't give ourselves in agriculture is that we don't take a moment to understand what the person across from you
is thinking or feeling.
Yeah. Whether it's a consumer or a salesperson.
Or a minister of agriculture.
Minister of agriculture. That we need to appreciate their values and how they do things. And I learned a lot from that book. So much so that I gave it to every director on our board.
No way. Okay.
And I said, you need to read this book because it'll make you a better person.
Yeah. To Sell Is Human. Okay, we'll add that to our reading list. Yeah. Any regrets you live with? I mean, I have to kind of wrap up. I mean, because we've talked so much about positive things, and I appreciate so much like your perspective of how you approach farming a business. But anything you look back and you kind of like live with regret and you're learning from it to think, you know what, this turned out to be better because of that or anything?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest regret with, I would say, within our family as a family business was not taking a better approach to communications.
Hmm.
And understanding people better. I'm a big one on doing personalities tests as well, right?
Yeah.
To just understand what that person's like. And it helped me a lot when I was at the board, a chair of a board. You know, I know that person was an introvert. I can't just say, hey, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
I said, I'll come back to you in 5 minutes, but I want you to think about it because I want an answer from you.
Yeah.
So that way they could actually not be put on the spot and think about it. I just think we tend not to understand people well enough in our businesses. And that's one regret where I think, you know, it turned out well with our family, but, you know, if we could have done it better, I wish we had kind of done communications training or personality stuff a little bit sooner in our operation. But
yeah.
I think, you know, it hasn't been negative. It's just now it's advice I give to people is that, you know, if you're working with a lot of people, take time to understand who you're working with.
Yeah. I mean, I love that advice to leave with people about understanding people. Obviously, the communications plugs, I come from a comms background. So
yes.
Anytime someone says communication, that we got to get better at it and you need training. I mean, that's very smart of you, especially in agriculture. Because again, like we said, we've gotten so good at the technology side. Have we maybe forgot about the people side? I mean, you mentioned earlier too about the economics of agriculture, environment of agriculture. And of course, that's how you round out sustainability is the people, like the social side of agriculture. And that's probably the area that for sustainability of our sector, that's probably the area that we need to get the best at.
Yeah. And, you know, the people, human capital is very important to our businesses. And I, you know, it's as much of importance as capital, physical capital.
Yeah.
And
I,
you know, the priorities we put on tractors and combines or, you know, equipment and barns, we need to put equally or more on people.
Yeah.
And I just see that we don't as producers in agriculture, honestly, anywhere.
Yeah, we focus more on the tractors and the cows and the livestock than we do.
We have to focus on people a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think life would be a lot better.
Yeah. I'll definitely end there because I feel like I love that you use the word human capital. I think it is absolutely the future of our sector. And again, like I said, you and I could probably talk for hours about a lot of different things, but the amount of advice you've left just with people to stew on and chew on today is going to be so valuable. Where can people find you if they had a question or they want to chat?
Yeah, the best thing probably is my Twitter handle. You can DM me there, at Cropper01.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Hey, no problem. Love the conversation.
So glad we got to talk.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
That's a wrap on this episode of the Country Guide podcast. Go to country-guide.ca for more great content to spark a conversation. And subscribe to the weekly newsletter to be notified when our next podcast episode is available.